are listening to Alpha Geek Radio.
The following is a production of Galactic Netcasts.
The date, August 25th, 2016, and welcome to the Alien Invasion number 191, a production of Galactic Netcasts. I'm Dave Nelson, and with me, as always, Brad Ludwig and Anessa Moyens. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
So how you doing?
Doing all right.
You know, I should ask more of a specific question than how are you really, because
I could be like, well, it's been a long week. College classes started back. It's been really busy. I'm really tired.
But really, when you think about it, there's not a whole lot of answers to how you doing. It's a very open, a very open-ended kind of question to ask.
It is.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get very lengthy answers when all you want is I'm doing okay.
Okay, well, I think we covered that ground pretty well.
Well, you didn't ask me.
Okay, Brad, how are you doing?
Great. I'm wearing a shirt and a tie today.
Yeah, you were saying in pre-show that you haven't worn a shirt and a tie while doing the podcast since 2012 or so.
Since 2012. 4 years. That's right. I got asked to help out at a job fair.
Oh, that's why you're wearing it. Okay.
Yes.
Excellent.
So, I was there for about an hour and a half, just kind of letting people know about a position that we have open in our web department, and then I left and went back to the office.
Excellent. Well, you did your duty.
Right? I did my duty in public.
You said duty.
I said duty.
All right. Oh, by the way, I want to thank Monkey Warhol for doing the intro to the podcast. Excellent
thank
job,
you.
As always. You can find their music at soundcloud.com/monkeywarhol. And quick note, if you are a subscriber or listener to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, haven't had an episode all summer long, and there's a reason behind that, but I'm not going to bore you with any of that. What I want to say is we are kind of pivoting that show, doing some changes, and Monkey Warhol, very excited about this, Monkey Warhol is going to be doing the theme music to that show as well.
What?
So, yeah. So right now, and the great thing is, if you're already a subscriber to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, you'll be a subscriber to the new show. And if you want to get it, you can just go to our website, gncast.com, and subscribe to either Sci-Fi Geeks Club or the Mega Feed, which gets you all the shows.
It's so mysterious, Dave.
I know. I knew there was something. I knew you were setting something up there.
I can't help myself. They have the buttons right there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is the show where we talk about beings from elsewhere in the galaxy and their appearances in film, TV, video games, comic book, science, real life. I could go on, but I won't, okay? And I'll continue by saying we divide the show up into three sections: the news, the sightings, feature, and our picks for the week. And like I said last time, I don't know why I break that down so detailed-like. Let's just get into it. That's the best way to go about it, really.
That's what she said.
All right, Brad, you got the first story in the news.
I do, and it's a humdinger. I just wanted to sound like I was from the 70s. Okay, hey, remember when Bill Clinton legitimized the search for life in space?
You mean Hillary Clinton's husband?
Yes, that guy. You may have heard of him. The search for extraterrestrial life didn't get serious in America until Bill Clinton took over the White House in the early 90s.
92. Yes.
The science was real, but the public perception was that it was X-Files nonsense. So while physicists built particle accelerators, the scientists investigating whether or not we're alone in the universe scraped by on small amounts of funding. But That all changed one fateful afternoon 20 years ago, when then-President Clinton gave a short speech about an unusual Martian meteorite. It was the first time a sitting president had used an executive office forum to discuss aliens. You're welcome. Hey, in just a few minutes, extraterrestrial investigators were granted a legitimacy they'd spent centuries trying to grasp. The prelude to that speech was fascinating. In December 1984, U.S. meteorite hunters found a strange 4.3-pound rock in Allen Hills, Antarctica, which is an ice-free region that's the home to an unusual amount of meteorites, because obviously they're hitting the ground and not getting stuck in snow and ice. Scientists think it came from Mars after another meteorite strike ejected it into space 17 million years ago. So then on August 6th, 1996, after years of analysis, NASA scientists led by David McKay published a study in the journal Science that pushed the idea to a pitch. Microscopic images of the ALH84001 showed off structures that seemed to look like primitive bacterial life forms. Nanobacteria no bigger than 100 nanometers in diameter. At the time, this was smaller than any cellular life we had ever known.
Didn't later on they kind of disprove it, saying that it was probably picked up somewhere else?
That is not within the purview of this story.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
So I do not know.
Forget I said anything about that. Continue.
But that speculation was enough to persuade President Clinton to hold a televised announcement and comment on the event the following day. At 1:15 p.m., joined by the White House Science and Technology Advisor, Jack Gibbons, Clinton went outside to the South Lawn of the White House and delivered a few remarks. He said in part, quote, "This is the product of years of exploration and months of intensive study by some of the world's most distinguished scientists. Like all discoveries, this one will and should continue to be reviewed, examined, and scrutinized. It must be confirmed by other scientists. But clearly, the fact that something of this magnitude is being explored is another vindication of America's space program and our continuing support of it, even in these tough financial times. I am determined that the American space program will put its full intellectual power and technological prowess behind the search for further evidence of life on Mars."
I wonder if that speech was used in the movie Contact, because I remember Clinton being part of that. And, you know, that's a Robert Zemeckis film, the same person that did Forrest Gump, and how they use pre-existing speeches in the context of the movie. So I'm thinking maybe if they probably used that speech, or I wonder if they did use that speech in that movie.
Oh, here it is, buried a little further down. Subsequent analysis didn't prove or disprove anything. A 2009 study suggested that more of what we knew about Mars helped strengthen the notion that life could have existed on the red planet, while other research cautioned against using morphology alone without proper biochemical analysis as a way to determine if something was fossilized life or not.
Okay. All right.
So there you go. An important moment in history where a U.S. president put forth the notion that, hey, alien life may have existed on Mars, and we should continue funding the research for that. So
then we've talked about the Clintons and their interest in extraterrestrial stuff before. Like, Hillary Clinton has made several comments about her belief in extraterrestrials and wanting to look into it some more if she becomes president. I seem to remember us talking about that. Anessa, yes. You remember things.
Sometimes.
Do you recall us that discussion?
Yeah, I do recall that we had talked about Hillary wanting to kind of say, hey, I'm going to dig out some info about UFOs and aliens and extraterrestrial life and whatnot. So I do remember talking about that.
Okay, thank you. I knew that you would be of assistance in the recollection department, because my memory's the worst. I can remember the dumbest things, but then when it comes to stuff I'm supposed to remember, I can't. It's not good.
I know the feels, yo. I know the feels.
Okay, so are you on Facebook or Twitter or YouTube? I'm asking the listeners, not you guys. So
I was like, okay, but you follow me.
Well, if you are, dear listeners, why don't you get with us, hook up with us?
As
the kids probably don't say these days, because we're there too. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, plus a few other places that we really don't do much with. So I don't know why I'm mentioning it. Anyways, look for Galactic Netcasts on the Twitters, on the Facebook, and on the YouTubes. We also got a area on our main. It's on the main page, but I think it's on every page of our website, gncast.com, where you click on the corresponding button logo of whatever social network it is, and then that will take you to our account. So just follow us for the latest on this show and others on the Galactic Netcasts Network. All right. Since our last show, a trailer dropped.
What?
For a movie called Arrival. Have either of you guys heard of this movie?
I've seen it.
You've seen
it? I've heard of it, but I've not seen the
trailer. I've seen the trailer.
Okay. I was going to say, because Brad, it's not out yet. I don't think you've seen it.
He's magical.
I am. I traveled in time and saw the film. It was spectacular.
So Arrival could offer a unique twist on extraterrestrial film, according to Cleveland.com. And don't you agree, Brad? The trailer's pretty awesome.
It is, and I'm really looking forward to their take on it, because it really puts forth the notion, and I think it solidly sets a tone of how would you actually communicate with life that is so alien to us. And how might that go down? So,
and we were,
it's wonderful speculative sci-fi.
Relating to my reference to Contact earlier, that was a pretty serious alien film.
Yeah, it was.
And this one kind of feels like it has that vibe to it as well. Of course, we had Independence Day resurgence earlier this summer, which by all rights was not a good film. There's a lot of alien invasion type films, and they come and go. But this one seems to be gaining some traction from reviewers or from people that know stuff about film. Based on the trailers, the story begins when oblong ships appear throughout the world. The alien visitors inside display unpronounceable symbols or display. Did I say display?
You did.
Okay. They have unpronounceable symbols throughout their ship. And utter incomprehensible noises when humans attempt to determine why they came here. Nations begin to quarrel, and the world's linguists are forced to work together to decipher the messages and avert war. The film is loosely based on a 38-page novella, The Story of Your Life, which is a dense and cerebral affair that ruminates on questions of free will and human consciousness. The movie, on the other hand, has clearly been given the blockbuster treatment. Now, this is all kind of written from Cleveland.com. This is not me. It may sound like this is what I'm saying, but this is what they're saying. They say, with explosions, high stakes, and expensive special effects. Trailers can be misleading, but it's safe to say that the film will be very different than the novella. But that doesn't mean it has no potential. Talented actors Forrest Whitaker, Amy Adams, and Jeremy Renner star. The guy who directed it has done Sicario, and Prisoners. Have you guys seen either of those movies?
I have not.
No.
I think they're like fancy pants type films.
They must be.
So what's a fancy pants? You mean like something that would be indie?
Oh. I don't know. Have you seen Sicario? It's so brilliant.
I saw that before it was made.
It was in my mind.
Hipster.
No, what I'm saying is these movies are not like popcorn affair, but they're actually, you know, movies that make you think. You know, movies that could
be cerebral.
Yeah, cerebral. They could be up for things like Academy Award nominations. That's what I'm trying to say. That's the kind of films that this director has makes. So people are kind of pinning high hopes on Arrival. Is that what it's called? See?
Yes.
See? Bad memory.
Okay.
A story of different cultures overcoming their differences to work for a common goal can be a compelling one in the right hands. The visitors use circular symbols to communicate in the novella, and similar symbols are shown in the trailer, suggesting that the struggle to learn the alien language is a central part of the movie's story. The idea of learning an entirely alien language is a fascinating one. And Arrival will arrive on November 11th. It's interesting because in Contact, they tried to figure out what the... How'd they do that again? The signal came in, and it was like a math...
Made this weird noise.
But they represented numbers, which was a math... some kind of formula, right? And then they used the formula to figure out the image, or it formed an image or something like that. So it was...
It was giving points in space, but it wasn't until they realized that it wasn't, you know, they were three-dimensional coordinates.
Okay. And then there was a Nazi, then there's video of Adolf Hitler, and that was controversial. So...
Yeah.
Then she...
And there was a Busey in it.
She was good to go. I remember her saying quite a few times, good to go. Remember that? She was kept on repeating that. And then, yeah.
She was pumped. She was ready to go.
This movie, though, looks pretty awesome. And it's cool that they're coming from an angle of a linguist. Because I don't think the linguist has been the main protagonist in a major blockbuster film ever. I think this may be the first time that a linguist has been put in that position in a movie. So something to be excited about, plus aliens. It's a win-win. So I'm looking forward to seeing it on November 11th, thereabouts.
There is a movie called The Linguists.
Well, I mean, in this type of film.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, but there's one with that name.
Thank you. All right, so one story to go here. Before we get to it, though, got to remind you guys that if you like what we hear, or if you like what you hear, not what we hear, because I don't know if you want to hear what we hear. If you like what you hear on this podcast, or the other ones that you may or may not listen to on the Galactic Netcast Network, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, say no more. You can support what we do by going to gncasts.com/support. And on that page, you'll find two links. One of the links goes to our Patreon campaign, where you can give a reoccurring monthly pledge. The other one goes to our Amazon affiliate page, where you can type in what you want to buy on Amazon. If you buy stuff on Amazon, this is perfect because, again, this is win-win. You click the link, you do your searches, you do your purchases, and a very small percentage of what you pay comes back to us to help us keep the network, keep the lights on here at the Galactic Netcast Network. Again, it's gncasts.com/support, and we thank you for your support of Galactic Netcasts. Now, Anessa, you've got the third and final news story. What do you got?
History!
Okay.
So there comes a UFO sighting story out of the history of the world famous Baron Manfred von Richthofen, the World War I German fighter ace. The tale claims that the feared pilot who shot down a confirmed 80 Allied fighters during the Great War also shot down a UFO. And if that wasn't strange enough, the witness, a fellow pilot, stated that the downed object was indeed some sort of spaceship because aliens exited the spacecraft. A UFO news blog uncovered the story from Austrian website OE24, where the German language site offered up a tale from the German fighter pilot, Peter Watzrick, a contemporary of Baron von Richthofen. I'm sorry, I'm butchering German.
It's okay. Baron von Richthofen?
Richthofen? He claimed to have witnessed the World War I UFO encounter. According to Watzrick, he saw the Red Baron, so-called due to his flying a bright red Fokker triplane, LOL Fokker.
Watch your language.
Engage and shut down the strange object over Belgium. We were terrified because we'd never seen anything like it before. The Baron immediately opened fire and the thing went down like a rock, shearing off tree limbs as it crashed into the woods. But that wasn't all. Two small aliens escaped from the craft and disappeared into the surrounding forest. The two fighter pilots were told not to ever mention it again. But at 105 years old, Watzrick, at the time of the interview and a retired airline pilot, added that telling the story could hardly make any difference. He said that when he saw the first UFO, they thought it was some sort of new aircraft invented by Americans because the United States had just entered the war on the Allied side. He admitted that he remained convinced that the craft, which he described as a glittering silver upside-down flying saucer, was American until a couple of decades later when a flying saucer scare erupted in the 1940s. It is not clear regarding his thoughts on the small guys that escaped the downed craft, possibly relegating them to being very small airmen. So, was it a UFO that the Red Baron and Watzrick encountered? Or could it have been something else? And since neither the UFO shot down by the Red Baron during World War I or the diminutive aliens were ever reported recovered, could it be that perhaps repairs were made or the craft and crew were rescued? Dun, bum, bum, bum.
Okay. I have a theory. It wasn't aliens. It was Snoopy.
It was Snoopy. Was he even around then?
No.
Schultz, he came out in the 50s, didn't he?
It matches the description. No.
Sorry.
Anessa.
You're applying your logic to this. What's wrong with you?
Snoopy used to fight the Red Baron on the Peanuts cartoons and comic strips.
Phrasing. Oh, Peanuts.
Yes.
Sorry.
That's true. So maybe that's where Mr. Schultz got his inspiration to create Snoopy?
That's possible. Chicken and egg time.
There.
Again, Anessa, tell us where you got this story from. I must have missed that part.
TheInquisitor.com.
And it comes from an interview that took place when?
Well, the Yahoo News blog uncovered the story from the Austrian website OE24, where the German language site offered up the tale from the German fighter pilot. And at some point, this interview was also given to the Weekly World News.
Okay.
So it's kind of like playing telephone a little bit.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I wonder how much was lost in the translation.
I don't know, but the story is longer and it does contain Mr. Waring.
Okay.
So I just feel like we talk about him a lot on the show.
Yeah.
But if you want to read more and what Scott C. Waring has to say, check out the article at The Inquisitor.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape. Huge. Just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
I can see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
It is time for our sightings segment. Real life, bona fide UFO, flying saucer, people from Mars above the sky.
Thingies.
And Brad, you did some investigation and found an awesome sighting, it looks like.
It's pretty intriguing. This is a boomerang UFO that moved silently over a Colorado neighborhood. The witness went out on the front porch of her ranch-style home in a quiet residential neighborhood in Lakewood, Colorado, at 9:30 p.m. on January 9th, 2013, to cool down, smoke a cigarette, and talk on the phone.
Oh, yeah. Somebody just got done, you know, doing the laundry.
Okay. Somebody's very excited about doing the laundry, it would seem. As she observed the stars in the east, she noticed a bright star-shaped light emitting rays and slowly moving in her direction above the tree line, about 70 to 100 feet and about a quarter of a mile away. Her first thought, of course, was that it was a low-flying helicopter. Now, she walked out onto her driveway for a better view in an attempt to hear the sound of the helicopter, but there was none. The witness began to think that the object might be an airplane preparing to land. She was confused yet curious up to this point. As the object moved closer over the house across the street, the witness could discern this was no ordinary aircraft. She saw a black boomerang-shaped object with a small cylindrical protrusion extending from behind it. The bright white light at the front of the craft created the appearance of a Star of Bethlehem, as it is often depicted in artwork. The object had a wingspan that was as wide as 1.5 neighborhood houses, approximately 108 feet. The witness had a compulsion to reach out and touch the bright light and thought that if she could touch it, it would feel like silk. I think she may have been drinking beforehand.
Or smoking the marijuana. Was it legal already in Colorado in 2012 or 2013?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
I don't think so.
Not that I would know. I'm just saying that I don't think that it was 2013. Hey, she observed on the bottom protrusion three smaller white lights in a triangular formation that blinked sequentially, left, middle, right, in a rotating pattern.
It was legal in 2013, but not until September.
Oh, okay. Somebody was celebrating early.
Yeah.
Well.
Okay, Brad.
If you know the right person, you can celebrate at any time, so I'm told.
Brad, how many lights were there, did you say?
There were four lights.
There were four lights!
No, there were three lights, and they blinked in sequential fashion. Left, middle, right, left, middle, right, left, middle, right, left, middle, right. All right. Let's see. Where are we at? Okay. She also observed on the bottom protrusion three smaller white lights in triangular fashion, blah, 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 visible on the underside of the object's wings were dim reddish pink crescent shaped lights. Numerous dogs in the neighborhood began to bark and howl. Suddenly, the bright front light and blinking white lights went out. The object seemed to slow slightly, missing a comma, as it was almost directly overhead. With the bright lights out, the witness noticed that a small cylindrical protrusion in the back was gray in color, and then appeared to be visible marks in a grid-like fashion on it. The grid pattern was asymmetrical, like a circuit board or computer hard drive. What? She was fixated and stared at the grid pattern. The narrow linear shapes appeared to be slightly convex, giving the grid pattern a texture. Her daughter prepared a rendering, and there's figures with this one, and we're not going to look at this right now. Based on her mother's description and the original diagram, okay. When the lights went out, the witness became frightened as she crouched in the shadow and wheel well of her pickup truck parked in the driveway. She lost track of the phone conversation, excused herself, and hung up. I could see how that went. I think there's a UFO. Sorry, I got to go.
I'll call you back.
The witness kept thinking to herself, please don't take me. Please don't take me. Please don't take me. She wondered why the lights went out just as the object was almost over her location. As the object moved beyond her house and her neighbor's house, the witness walked through her house to the backyard where she could get a view of the object as it moved east. She observed an antenna-like object at the top of the craft that had a small reddish-pink blinking light on top. The antenna was 2 or 3 times the height of the winged craft. Okay. The witness watched the object until it went out of sight over the trees about a quarter of a mile away. She wanted to call her daughter to tell her about the experience and went to the front yard to find the telephone where she had last used it. Then she realized she had the phone in her hand the whole time. What? I think there is more than weed involved.
Yeah.
Smoke weed every day. Okay. She dialed, but there was so much static on the line that she hung up. She redialed and there was still some static, but it diminished over time.
Okay, you know what? I appreciate the detailed report. Because some reports are like light and sky.
Yeah.
Two minutes. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, it was like, I saw lights in the sky. They flashed. They moved around.
This happened 30 years ago.
But, okay, thanks, bye.
Yep. But okay, but there's such a thing as too detailed.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that she's thinking as she's watching this craft, please don't take me, please don't take me, please don't take me. So why does she keep following it?
Whatever.
Yeah. She's
when you're panicked and fascinated,
it's like in the you know, like the horror movies where you go exactly where you're not supposed to.
Mm-hmm. Well, she had her clothes on and she wasn't having sex with a boy out in the woods, so she's fine.
Yeah.
But she went outside.
She got to break some other rules. You got to be bad to be punished.
Breaking the law.
Fashion.
F the man.
Yeah. Keeping his sister down while she's got static on the phone.
All right.
All right. Let's wrap this up here. The field investigator who checked this out canvassed the neighborhood for other witnesses and none were found. No correlating cases were found in MUFON, CMS, or New Forks database. Based on the detailed descriptions, vivid reactions, and high credibility of the witness, the case disposition is unknown UAV, or unidentified aerial vehicle.
Anessa, what's New Fork?
It is the National UFO Reporting Center. You're welcome.
Oh, okay.
Bam!
Thank you. I saw that you were highlighting it, so I figured... you're checking it out, trying to figure out what those with that.
I am because I was not familiar, or at least it wasn't something that we talk about a whole lot. It's always MUFON.
MUFON.
Not New Forks.
What's CMS?
Content Management System.
I think that was thinking that too. Whenever I see CMS, that's the first thing that comes to mind.
You know, that's a good question. What is
case management system?
Oh, there you go.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, you promised
or Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools.
You promised
Center for Medicare and Medicaid
okay,
Services.
Okay, come on.
Sorry.
You promised a very interesting sighting, and you delivered, Brad. That was great.
It did not suck, sir.
No.
Please don't take me. Please don't take me. Please don't take me.
I mean, what? Hey, do we have some feedback, Dave?
We do have feedback, and you can provide us feedback of your own by emailing aliens@gncasts.com. You can call our voicemail number, which is area code 805-328-3966. We have a contact page on our website as well. It's gncasts.com/contact. And this comes from Paolo in London.
Paolo.
Is it wrong that whenever I think of Paolo, I think of Paolo from the first couple of seasons of Friends?
I didn't really watch Friends.
Oh, okay.
I suppose not.
No, Rachel was dating Paolo before she started dating Ross. Before Ross and Rachel was dating Paolo. And Ross was very jealous of Paolo. Because Ross always kind of loved and lusted after Rachel.
That's true. I only watched the first two seasons and then lost interest.
Nah, anyways.
I had a friend that would tell me about it on the bus. On the school bus. She's like, did you see Friends? And my answer every week was no.
Yeah.
She's like, let me tell you what happened.
Yeah, she proceeded to tell you anyways.
Yes.
It's one of those people? Yeah. Okay.
But it helped pass by the time.
Yeah. All right. So anyways, sidetracked a little bit there. Paolo from London. He wrote, I'd like to suggest a couple of stories for your alien invasion show. Some are from many years ago and might or not have been presented already. I've only been watching for the last 6 months, so he watches on YouTube. Thank you, Paolo.
Yeah.
But they are really interesting for the fact that they involve a large number of kids at school age who might not be very inclined to lie about this kind of events. At least not as an organized group like adults might. The three sightings are the following. Ariel School in Rua, Zimbabwe. Westall School in Melbourne, Australia. Broadhaven in Wales, UK. As additional motivation for giving credit to the people who have these sightings, let me tell you the potato tale.
I am intrigued.
I am too.
I like potatoes.
Potato didn't exist in Europe prior to the year 1500, having been imported from the Americas after the explorations. I'm pretty sure that the few people who knew of potatoes in Europe or even had seen one during the first few years were not believed because there wasn't enough evidence to support their claims. And in addition, there wasn't any television, newspaper, or YouTube to help spread the news or the image of a potato. So I'm guessing that he's using potato as an analogy to UFO, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Aha.
Because these people didn't necessarily have any way to show evidence that they saw a UFO. It's the same thing from when the potatoes started making its way overseas to Europe. People who saw potatoes for the first time and went, you know, to visit a friend or something, I was like, hey, or like write a letter and be like, hey, I saw this amazing thing. It's called a potato. It looks like this. And it tastes awesome if you bake it and whatnot. And then people are like, what are you talking about? And you're crazy. So it's kind of the same thing, except it, you know.
And they're like, they're totally carb filled. It's a lot of carbs.
Because they totally worried about carbs in the 1500s.
Yeah. Interesting. So I think that we have a mission, people. I think our mission is to take these three sightings that Paolo mentioned in his feedback and investigate them further and include them in future sightings. What do you guys think of that?
Yes.
I am for this.
Okay. So this is what we'll do the next three episodes. Each of us will take one of these sightings and we'll make it the official sighting of that episode.
Boom.
Ooh.
All right. Well, thank you, Paolo. Again, you can send us feedback, aliens@gncasts.com, or call the voicemail number 805-328-3966. All right, time for our picks and warnings. Picks, 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 warnings, 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 picks, 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 warnings, warnings, warnings. That's our new intro.
Nice.
Okay, so these are things that we have taken into our senses as entertainment that somehow relate to aliens. And it looks like Anessa is first up on the lineup.
I am. And my pick is Australians.
Oh,
except it's spelled like Australians, like E-N as opposed to A-N.
That's clever.
So I know it was really clever.
It looks like Auster-aliens.
So I found this movie on Amazon Prime, spoiler alert. And it was made in 2014. And on IMDb, the description says, extraterrestrials launch a nationwide assault on Australia, much to the bafflement of the rest of the world.
What are they picking on Australia for? The hell?
I can't tell you.
Oh.
Because that would be a major spoiler of the movie.
Okay.
So it's really a goofy movie. It's really cheesy. And I think it's another one of those that it's great to watch with friends. I, however, watch this alone. So, but anyway, you have this group of friends, and it's like some of them are in a band, and then it's their relatives and friends and whatnot that are in this movie. And there is this girl, or the lead singer, I guess, of the band, who as a child had witnessed a UFO, and she's convinced that the UFO that she witnessed gave her powers, gave her the like psychic, not the telekinetic, telepathic, anyway, like abilities with the mind to do more than just think. So anyway, so she's convinced of this, and nobody really believes her, and they give her a hard time. And when she grows up, she's in this band, and she's, you know, preaching to people about her abilities, and nobody really believes her. And then, of course, there's UFOs that start invading Australia, and nobody really knows why. And these aliens have the ability to kind of shapeshift, except they've got certain quirks about them, so you can tell if it's an actual human or an alien. And it's really ridiculous because, and I'm just going to go ahead and spoil this, but there's one of the aliens that ends up taking the shape of one of the friends in this group, and he's green, and nobody notices that their friend is green. And he holds his arms kind of weird, and he like twitches and makes these weird laughing sounds and whatnot, but nobody notices anything out of the ordinary. I'm telling you, this movie is really ridiculous, but I think I would have enjoyed it more if there were other people watching it so you could poke fun at it. But overall, I actually kind of liked it.
Didn't you have any cats with you while you were watching it? You were watching it with somebody then, if you had the cats with you.
That's true. I don't remember where they were at the time. Although I watched part of it. So I only had cats with me part of the time. And when I say at work, it was like during lunch, not actual work.
Oh, sure.
I can't. There's students in the lab. I'd get in trouble.
It's true.
All right. Thank you. By the way, how many flying saucers are you going to give this sucker?
I would give it a 3.
3 out of 5 flying saucers.
Yep.
Australians. That's a great name.
I know. I thought it was really clever.
All right. So, I and my wife, Stephanie, went to Star Trek, the Starfleet Academy Experience this week.
I saw the picture of you in the chair. Yeah. It's awesome.
I know. I was on the bridge of the Enterprise. Yeah.
Oh, wait. Hang on.
It was super cool. So it's this exhibit that's been at the Canada Aviation and Space Museum all summer, and I was really worried that we'd never get to it because things kept on popping up, was working all summer, and, you know, there was a money shortage situation and all that, blah, blah, blah. So Tuesdays we found out was buy one admission, get one free. So it cost us like $22 to get into this sucker.
Nice. Oh, cool.
And it's neat because there's a bunch of props. Like when you first walk in, there's a huge model of the Enterprise, NCC 1701, the original one.
Is that the one that they redid?
No, it's not. No, okay. It's not. It is about the same size, though, it looks like.
Okay.
And there's some cool effects on it. I have a video of it. I haven't posted it anywhere yet. It looks like it's going into warp, but then at the same time, it gets these like videos and pictures kind of projected on the side of it, of like images from the original series and Next Generation and all these pictures from Star Trek. So that's neat. There's also kind of a timeline when you first walk in where you can read the whole timeline of the Star Trek universe, you know, like Zefram Cochrane builds his ship, achieves warp speed, gets discovered by the Vulcans, and then there's Jonathan Archer and the NX-01, you know, and then all the whole history of Starfleet and the Star Trek universe. And then you go through, you're a student, basically. You're it's like, how'd they describe it? Like career day at Starfleet Academy, where you have to try out all these different jobs that you could have in Starfleet, like a doctor or a scientist or a tactician, or, you know, each main career that one would be or one would have if you were a member of Starfleet. And you learn about real science fiction or science concepts at the same time, you know, like exobiology, astronomy, language, all this stuff that you learn at the same time. And you have a watch that you have to check in at all these different stations and fulfill these tasks. And at the very end, you get a readout of your profile, of your name, and what the job is that you're going to be in Starfleet. I failed miserably at Klingon. I had to learn, we had one of the stations, you had to learn Klingon, and I was terrible at it. Not for a lack of trying. I really put a lot of gusto into it, and Stephanie was kind of embarrassed by my projection of Klingon during it. But there's a phaser range where you fire the phaser. There's one where you're examining a Klingon on a med bed. That's funny. And there's all these. You go through a transporter beam, so there's like an effective view, and that's part of the package that you get at the end. You get the video of you like using the transporter and getting beamed away. But the final thing is you have to take the Kobayashi Maru test on the bridge of the Enterprise D, and the Enterprise D bridge version that they have in this exhibit was designed by Michael Okuda. Like the actual, it's not modeled after the bridge that he designed for the Next Generation. This bridge that we had at the exhibit was designed by Michael Okuda. So that was pretty impressive. And in the bridge, there's all these stations. You take the test, but then there's also the captain's chair and the navigation and what's the first, the two at the front? Navigation and
Helm,
maybe? Or ops? One of the two. Anyways. So that's where we took a picture. Stephanie and I both sat in the captain's chair. And
posted. Yeah, it's helmsman and navigator.
Okay. Thank you. But it's running until like next week. It ends like, well, not next week, maybe the week after. And there's different locations around the world that these take place. And one of them's in New York City. And I don't know where the other ones are. I just know that there's one in New York City and one here in Ottawa. And that is my pick. And I'm going to give it, guess how many star or how many flying saucers?
2,000.
Yeah, if I could, I would. But it's 5 out of 5, definitely.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, Brad, what you got?
Well, there's a game that came out that's called No Man's Sky.
Yeah, I've heard of
it. And I spent a good deal of time watching some videos of gameplay, and it's absolutely fascinating. Now, No Man's Sky, for those of you who aren't familiar with it
and haven't heard the last episode or the episode before last, Dave talked a little bit about the trailer.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Well,
you're welcome.
That was before the game came out, though. The game has come out since then.
Yeah, that was before it came out. Yeah, fine.
Brad's talking about the
gameplay. I'm going to pick something else then.
You're talking about the gameplay.
Oh, okay. So that was a weird echo. The game is designed as what's the best way to describe it? Basically, you are traveling the galaxy through, and you find planets, you find materials to upgrade your equipment, to upgrade your ship, and you meet other alien races. And I think that one of the really cool mechanics that they have in it is there are multiple alien races that you can run into. And when you go to a planet, there is potential for finding these, they're like round shaped, they're like cylindrical monoliths, I guess is the best way to describe them. And when you activate them, it will teach you a word in one of these other alien languages. And the benefit to that is, as you're traveling, you can find trading posts and space stations where you can run into aliens and they will speak to you and they will ask for assistance, ask for materials that you might have, and they will speak to you in their language. And as you learn more of their words, it will actually start to fill in readable text so you can better understand what they're asking for. Because when you run into these aliens, you typically get like three to four choices for a possible answer for their question. So as you successfully help these alien races, you can actually build up goodwill and better trading position, I guess, is the best way to describe that, or more favorable interactions with aliens. And it's really interesting because one of the devices that you have is a gun / mining tool / resource grabber. One of the more valuable materials that you can find out there is gold. And as you mine gold, you have the ability to find either, like I said before, trading posts, space stations, or sometimes you will find a trading kiosk where you can trade materials in for money and buy materials that you might need. Now, a lot of the game is materials management or inventory management. Your gun and your ship will have a limited number of slots for you to store items in. And you find yourself making some interesting decisions because you need to make sure that you are mining plutonium to power your suit that you wear that protects you from the elements on these different planets. A planet could have a high level of radiation or a high level of temperature. So you need to have enough power to regulate the temperature or regulate these different hazards. And you need to use plutonium to keep that powered. You need to have enough materials for your ship so you can actually leave the atmosphere and go to another planet. So you need to kind of be thinking of what materials that you need to perform certain tasks. And some planets might have more of one material and less of another, and you could end up being stranded if you don't play your cards right, if you don't manage your inventory right. So, and all the while that this is going on, the further that you travel closer to the center of the galaxy, you have the ability to run into this being called Atlas. And there's a bit of a mystery that you're finding more out about this as you go. So the game has gotten a lot of positive and negative feedback. A lot of people feel that it's repetitive because you are constantly gathering materials and trying to trade for a bigger and better ship, trade for a bigger and better weapon/material gathering device, and so on. So, and some people just want to get further along in the story. So it's been kind of a mixed reaction. It is beautiful to watch, though. Absolutely beautiful. And you can run into different forms of alien life, which is interesting, too, depending on the planet you're on. There are some planets where I remember watching a game video where somebody found like huge dinosaurs, essentially. Absolutely gigantic dinosaurs. And he ended up on another planet where he found a lot of small mammals. So there's just such a wide variety of planets, types of planets, types of life that you can run into that if you were interested in that style of game, you could easily play for months and not get tired of it.
Now,
so,
I have a question for you, Brad. Are you going to be picking up No Man's Sky and playing it?
Absolutely not, because if I were to start to play that, I would probably lose my job. No, I will not be playing it. I'm slowing down on my Fallout 4 a little bit.
Finally.
Yeah.
And this is like, thank God.
Well, Nuka World's coming out next week, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
You have a replacement standing by.
Yeah, she'll have a replacement boyfriend standing by as well.
It's funny, because that was initially a game that I bought for me.
I know. Absolutely terrible. So, I will not be getting it, not due to lack of interest or because I don't think that it's a good game, but I easily see myself getting completely immersed into this game for quite some time.
Okay.
So I would give it 4.5 out of 5 stars.
Okay, from just watching the gameplay.
Or flying saucers, yes, from watching gameplay.
All right. It's been a good week. I think all of our picks did pretty well as far as the flying saucer scale went.
Heck yeah.
No Man's Sky, Star Trek, the Starfleet Academy experience, and Australiens. All right, those are our picks. We would love for you to join us every week on the Alien Invasion. If you aren't already, you can do that by going to gncasts.com/subscribe. And on that page, you'll find links to all the places you can get our podcast, like iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn, or other places fine podcasts are offered. Also, please go to gncasts.com/sign up and maybe get in on our Slack group, our active Slack, or actually our Slack group has been asleep lately. I don't know what the hell's going on, but I think you are the key. You, dear listener, are the key to getting it back into action again. Of course, if you don't know what Slack is, it's basically a private chat. You can use it on the computer. You can use it on the app, and you can chat with me, you can chat with Brad, or any of the other hosts, or former guests, or just other listeners to Galactic Netcast shows. That's gncasts.com /sign up and request for you to sign up for our Slack group.
And the secret is Matt Stein and I are on it constantly because we use... we have our own work Slack channel,
yeah,
so we get notifications whenever there's communication on it. So
okay.
There's a lot of chit chat from, well, not a lot of chit chat, but more often than not, you'll get a quick response if you were to happen on our Slack channel from Matt or myself.
And we won't ignore you. I mean, you're just as important to us than like Brad is to me or. Brad or Matt is to Brad, or, you know, you are just as important as the other hosts are, you, the listener. So please join the Slack. It's fun. That's going to do it for this episode of the Alien Invasion. Thank you for joining us. Final thoughts, Brad, go ahead. You're first. Always first.
I'm first.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned briefly that Nuka World is coming out for Fallout 4. The reason why I mention it is it is an amusement park that has been taken over by Raiders, but they do have a galactic or space themed area.
Oh, neat.
And they will have automatronic, animatronic aliens in there. So I am looking forward to exploring that part of Nuka World.
Have you found the flying saucer on Fallout 4? Wasn't there supposed to be a flying saucer?
I did.
You did?
Yes, and I got the... I felt really bad, because the whole thing, and I think at this point the game's been out for over a year and a half now. I'm not spoiling anything, but the craft goes... you stumble across the craft, you find the alien, and it immediately attacks you. You don't have an opportunity to... you know, help him out because the his vehicle has crashed and he looks injured. And I'm like, oh gosh, I'd really like to help the alien. I hope I get the choice to either, you know, make a choice to either attack or help or whatever. And as soon as I walked into the area where he was, he immediately started firing at me. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to. No. Oh, crap. Well, he's going to kill me if I don't do something. So that made me a little sad.
What an asshole.
Kind of. Yeah. But I'm kind of hoping that in Nuka World, you'll get another opportunity to encounter these animatronic aliens, and maybe something different will happen. So
I'm just kind of wondering if the alien was there and then he was attacked by some feral ghouls or something, and so he just assumed everything that comes in through the cave attacks him.
Yeah.
That could be.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great theory.
Very well.
Anessa, what's your final thought? Something good. I know it is.
She's building up a dramatic pause here.
Yep.
For disappointment. You're welcome. Good night.
That's it? You got nothing?
That's it.
Oh. Okay. Well, listeners, tune in next week. Maybe Anessa will actually have something for her final thought.
I still love you, honey, even though you have nothing to offer right now.
Aww.
Thanks for nothing. All right.
There it is.
We'll talk
Sometimes
to you guys.
Sometimes nothing is all you need.
We'll talk to you guys next time.
All right.
Bye.
You have been listening to a production of Galactic Netcasts. For more about this show and others, go to gncasts.com. That's GNCASTS.com.